This morning has been so joyful, just what we needed, just what the doctor ordered. Daniel, nachas, stirring, beautiful. Eli, nachas, stirring, beautiful. Rana and Mike, happy birthday, welcome home, so fabulous to see you. Elizabeth, so cutie pie, and three generations, her parents and all four grandparents, so happy, so joyful, such a blessing, so what we need. And the reason that we all need this morning is because we are living through an unprecedentedly dark time. It's just really, really dark for the Jewish world and for the world. We're now at war for 8 weeks, and there has been so much darkness this week. The hostages who were freed, thank God they were freed. But the stories they shared of what they endured in captivity, dark. The hostages who have not been freed, what they are dealing with in captivity, what their families are dealing with, so dark. The captives that we know by name, who have been murdered in captivity. I saw a new list of that came out. Dark. The resumption of war. Just now, yesterday, now. Dark. What it means for Israeli soldiers and their families. Dark. What it means for innocents in Gaza who are caught up in the crosshairs and who are so deserved by Hamas. Dark. What it means for anti-Semitism, even more on fire on campuses and everywhere in the world. Yesterday, a woman self-immolated before the Israeli embassy in Atlanta, Georgia. Just dark. And where does this end? And when does this end? And how does this end? And nobody knows. Dark. So we need it this morning. But the big question is, how do we engage this darkness in a healthy way? What is the healthiest way to engage this darkness? So I know of two not healthy ways to engage this darkness, and I know of them, and I know they're not healthy, because I've been working my way through both of them over the last 8 weeks. One way to not engage this darkness is just to cut yourself off from this pain. To not read the paper. To not follow the story. It's just too much. It's just too painful. It just hurts too much. And instead, to fill our lives with the distractions that we in America can do. For example, will Alabama be able to beat Georgia today? Will Michigan be stunned by Iowa today? And, of course, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, and where was the latest sighting, etc. And we read the sports pages, and we follow the news about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce as a distraction because we just can't bear to follow the story. That's one extreme that's not healthy. Here's the other extreme, which I've tried too, which is that you fall down a rabbit hole, that all you do is follow the news, and all you do is just get so depressed by it that you can't sleep, you wake up exhausted. That doesn't seem like it's very productive either. So here's the question. Is there a way to engage the darkness without becoming dark? Is there a way to engage this very depressing reality without becoming depressed? Is there a way to follow this story that generates heartbreak every day without falling into a rabbit hole? And the festival of Hanukkah that begins next week, I think, has a very special message for us. Hanukkah offers us two moves for this world. So first of all, as you know, we don't observe Hanukkah during the summertime. We don't light our menorahs in July. We celebrate Hanukkah in the cold and in the dark. It's a festival for darkness. It's a festival for our time because we're living in a world of darkness. And Hanukkah has the following message. One message of Hanukkah is that even in the darkness, there is light to be seen. And part of our job, again, to engage darkness without becoming dark, is to ask ourselves, where is there legitimate light to see in the darkness? So I'll give you a story, and it's there to see it if your eyes are open to it. So I have shared before, since October 7th, the story about Matanya Ben Sofit, who is a friend of ours in Jerusalem. He works at Beit Prat. And his story of this war is told through three photographs. Two photographs I've shared before. The third photograph I just saw this week. The first photograph is that Matanya Ben Sofit is dressed in his army outfit, his green Israeli IDF uniform, and he's holding his beautiful baby girl, Ya'ara, and he's giving her a kiss, holding her up, and it's the day before he is called up to go into Gaza. And the story has so much pathos. Here is a man who loves his baby daughter. Matanya loves Ya'ara. And here's a man who loves his country, loves Israel, loves the Jewish homeland, believes in the Jewish homeland, loves Zionism, believes, unlike college campuses that say that Zionism is a dirty word, he believes Zionism is the holiest word, and it's a word worth living for. And it's a word whose ideals he's prepared to die for if necessary. And so he leaves his daughter, Ya'ara, and he leaves his wife, Ra'ut, and he leaves his home, and off he goes into battle. That's picture number one. And then I shared with you photograph number two, a word picture of photograph number two. He is a tank commander in Gaza, and being in a tank feels like one of the most unsafe places to be because Hamas has anti-tank missiles. And sure enough, his tank was hit by an anti-tank missile. Two soldiers under his command were killed. They fell in battle. And he was rescued from a burning tank by a medic. The medic, it turns out, happened to also be somebody who studied at Beit Prat, where Matanya works. And he was pulled out of the burning tank, and he was taken to a hospital. And the second photograph showed Matanya Ben Sofit in a hospital, alive and recovering, but bandaged from head to toe. That was the second photograph. And then this week, thank God I saw the third photograph. Matanya is at home. He's back with his wife, Ra'ud. He's back being a father to Ya'ara. And this photograph shows him, first of all, no bandages. And he looks fabulous, and he is smiling, and he is surrounded by his friends, and he is, thank God, alive and happy to be alive. Now, does he carry psychic scars? Of course. And will he have to spend a long time trying to deal with this, the trauma? Of course. But he is alive, and seeing him is an inspiration. Part one of Hanukkah's message is, see the light, because there is light to be seen. But as important as it is to see the light, part two of Hanukkah's message is, we have to increase the light. We have to bring the light. Now here's a question for you. How do we bring the light in Israel? How do we who live here, how do we whose kids do not serve? How do we, who have the luxury of pressing pause when our Israeli brothers and sisters do not have the luxury of pressing pause, how do we bring the light. How do we increase the light? So I want to tell you a story and then offer a suggestion from the story. This story is about a day in the life of an IDF soldier. You will not read about this story in the papers. You will not see this story on TV. You will not hear about this story in a podcast. It's an ordinary day of an ordinary soldier, and I only know about it because he's our extended mishpacha in Israel. But this young man is part of a crew of 7 Israeli soldiers, and they're in an explosives unit, and they drive around Gaza in an armored vehicle. And their job is to find specific strategic targets. They're experts in explosions to destroy the targets, whether it's a tunnel or whether it's the home of a Hamas commander. There's 7 Israeli soldiers in an armored vehicle, and because they're in the heart of enemy territory, they cannot get out of the armored vehicle. In fact, this armored vehicle is even more armored than the tanks because they were hit by an anti-tank missile and they survived. And their tour, because they cannot get out of the armored vehicle, is for 50 hours. And for 50 hours, 7 men, they're all men, are in this cramped vehicle. And what do they eat and drink for 50 hours? Whatever food and water they bring on the vehicle, they eat it on the vehicle, they drink it on the vehicle. And yes, I ask the next question, how do they attend to their bodily needs? And the answer is they would not, do not, cannot get out of the armored vehicle to take care of their business because they could be shot and killed. And so they do it there. So they eat and drink and attend to bodily needs for 50 hours in this tank. And then they go back to Israel after the 50 hours are up. They get out of the tank and they breathe fresh air and they clean up. And then they get back in the tank for another 50-hour tour of duty. Rinse and repeat. Now, if you're like me, and when you fly coach, you don't want the middle seat because it's too cramped. If you're like me, when you fly coach, you want the aisle seat so you can have easier access to the restroom. It's unimaginable what these 7 soldiers do on these 50-hour tours of duty, time and again. Now, why am I telling you this sad, weird story? And what does it have to do with anything? Well, I'm not a therapist. I'm not a mental health professional. But can you even imagine the levels of trauma that these 7 soldiers have? The trauma, the layers of trauma, the accumulated trauma that they have and that their loved ones have worrying about them in this armored vehicle for 50 hours. On top of which, all of the trauma that Israelis have been through since October 7th. In fact, Tuesday night, a number of Israelis were right here sharing their stories, and it was impossible to listen to. It was so painful. Can you even imagine what it was like to live through? Which is to say that Israel is a traumatized nation. And Israelis are a traumatized people. Let me put it to you this way. If God were to make a miracle and to airlift 7.1 million compassionate, loving therapists to Israel to treat the 7.1 million Israeli Jews for all of this trauma, and these 7.1 million therapists were working with these 7.1 million Israelis who are traumatized full time, that wouldn't even begin to scratch the surface of the trauma and the psychological need. So what do we do? Well, Rabbi Tarfon teaches us, Lo hamlacha ligmor, lo alecha hamlacha ligmor, v'lo ata ben chorin lehi batel mimenu. We cannot fully and finally resolve the problem of Israelis' trauma through this horrendous darkness, but neither are we free to desist from doing what we can do. So it feels like 100 years ago, but it was only last September, September 2022. For T.E. Reads, we read this book called Who by Fire, written by the Canadian-Israeli journalist Mati Friedman. And he tells the story of Leonard Cohen, the Canadian singer and songwriter, who 50 years ago, during the Yom Kippur War, Leonard Cohen goes to Israel and he ends up spending 3 weeks on bases singing songs for Israeli soldiers and pilots. And the drama is he's singing to Israeli pilots during the Yom Kippur War, and many of those pilots don't come back. He's singing and they're hearing, and they don't know whether they're going to survive the day. And this book tells about Leonard Cohen's 3 weeks, and we did a class on Zoom. There are about 100 learners. Everybody really liked the book a lot. But the comment that I remember, which stands out for me these months later, came from an Israeli who's a member of our shul, who said, "I was there. I was on one of those bases. I was a much younger man 50 years ago. I was in my 20s, and I was serving in Sahal, and it was on the base, and I was there when Leonard Cohen sang his songs." And then he said, "I didn't even know who Leonard Cohen was. And I can't remember what he sang. And to tell you the truth, I cannot even remember whether I liked his music. But here's what I do remember. I remember we felt all alone. I remember we felt vulnerable. And here's some guy who's not even Israeli. He's coming to be here with us. His song, his music, I long ago forgot, but his love, I will never forget." We need to do that. We need to do that. How do we bring light? How do we increase light when we live here and they live there? The answer is we go there and show them our love. So we are going to be doing a solidarity mission to Israel, and you'll get more details about this via email, but it's going to be February 11th through February 14th, a solidarity mission through JNF. The good news is we wanted to do it now in December, because strike while the iron's hot, they could use the love now. The good news is there's so many groups that JNF is booked. The first appointment we could get is February 11th through February 14th, so we're doing it. This is not a fun tourist trip. This is not like Israel at 75 Spark where you see cool sights. This is not learning in a yeshiva, learning at Hartman and being uplifted. No, this is going to fields to work the fields that are lying fallow because the soldiers are in the front lines. The best way to shine a light is to show love. Wouldn't it be so cool if 50 years from now, some Israeli says, "Newton, I didn't even know what Newton was. Newton, I didn't even know where Newton was. And I don't remember what they said. And I don't remember what they did. But I remember in our vulnerable hour. I remember in their darkness, they came to say, 'We love you.' Their love, I will never forget." That is our move now, February 11th.